Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yo, what's up, listeners? Welcome to another episode of Thinking Outside the Boombox, your number one source for hip-hop and R&B news. My name is Ahmad, and I am your host. It is Sunday, January 23rd. Welcome back to the podcast. Very excited to have you all tuning in this week. It's the second stop of the farewell tour. For those who may be joining for the first time, this is the fourth and final season of Thinking Outside the Boombox, and so I've decided to celebrate that by inviting guests, previous guests of the podcast back on one final time, kind of as their last stop on my farewell tour, and they get to choose the topic that we are going to discuss in the episode. So very excited to talk about that in the Dig Deeper segment. Before I get into that, I do want to talk about the podcast newsletter and the mailing list. Before I get into the Dig Deeper segment, I'll give you a song of the week. I'll give you the press play segment where I keep you up to date on the latest hip hop and R&B news. But because this conversation is a little bit longer than the usual episodes, I've decided to just have the song of the week and the links for the press play segment in the podcast newsletter. And then we're going to jump right into the Dig Deeper segment. So, you know, any, you know, music videos, songs, performances that or albums that I really want you to check out, I usually put the links to those in the podcast newsletter so that everything I mention on the podcast, you have access to. So if you get the podcast newsletter this week, it will feature, you know, the song of the week as well as everything since the last episode that I really, really want you to check out. So if you go to thinkingoutsidetheboombox.com, right on the homepage, there's a place for you to submit your email address. You will get a copy of the podcast newsletter in your inbox every time there's an episode when you sign up for the mailing list that way. Or you can just go to the newsletter tab at thinkingoutsidetheboombox.com and all of the podcast newsletters are there. So definitely sign up for the mailing list. Make sure you check out the podcast newsletter so you can have all the links to everything for this week. And without any further ado, I'm going to take a short break, pay some bills, and then when I come back, we'll jump right into the Dig Deeper segment. If you have a business, you need a website. What's the best way to get a website up and running? Choose a website hosting company that makes it simple, like Pear Networks. Pear has over 20 years of experience managing the entire digital ecosystem for thousands of online businesses all around the world. Pair makes it easy for you with do-it-yourself website building tools and features, including simple drag-and-drop page design. And they have guaranteed U.S.-based support technicians ready to help you whenever you need it, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Right now, when you sign up with Pair Networks, you'll receive 1 free month of web hosting. See for yourself how easy it is to build your website for free. Visit pair.com/free to get your first month of website hosting for free by using the code QUICKSTART. That's pair.com/free, promo code QUICKSTART to get started today. Let's get back to the show. Welcome back to Thinking Outside the Boombox. It is now time for the Dig Deeper segment. As I mentioned at the top of the episode, this is the second stop of the farewell tour for the podcast. If you've been listening for the past few weeks, then you know that the farewell tour is where I invite guests of the podcast back onto the show, but this time they get to choose the topic. The first stop on the tour was with Joe and Chloe, where we talked about spirituality and hip-hop. And now I would like to welcome back to the studio friends and the esteemed hosts of What's in the Box Office, my friends Brian and Noah. Welcome.
Yes, esteemed.
Oh, yeah. I'm so full of esteem.
It's literally, I got steam coming out of my ears. It's literally a tour because we're recording on location. You're yes. going from place to place around Chicago.
I went to Joe and Chloe too, so maybe I'll have to keep this. Theme, yeah, that's
might great. Have to. Thank you for having us. It's very exciting.
Yes, love to be here as always.
Very excited to have you. So what is the topic for today? What did you all want to discuss?
Beets.
Yes. I think they're delicious.
Yes, I don't care
with some goat cheese. My mom used to make me eat them when I was a kid. I remember jars of beets around, and I'd be like, why?
Here's what you do. You roast them, you blend them, you make pasta with them. It doesn't really taste like beets, but it's a cool color. That's a good idea. But yeah, the beats of the song, the production, the rhythms, yeah. the samples, the unsung half, but depending on who you ask, maybe the more prominent half.
Well, I find myself really connecting to a song through beats because if I'm listening to music, I'm doing something else. And so I don't really have the cognizant strength to just focus on the lyrics, so it's just the melody. Mm-hmm. That I'll walk different, or I'll type differently, or I'll do something, and that's because of the beat. So it really, a song could have really shitty lyrics, but if it has a good beat, I'm gonna enjoy listening to it.
Yeah, the beat's what's gonna hook you first, and then if that's good, you'll stick around.
Yeah,
absolutely, awesome. I'm very excited for this topic. I took the liberty, and this is perfect because when I did my history of hip hop series a month or so ago, I mostly focused on the rapping, and I didn't really talk a lot about the history of hip-hop production, which is honestly just as, and actually maybe the utmost importance when it comes to the history of hip-hop. So I took some notes of just some of the most important happenings in production in hip-hop's creation. So I wanted to start with that, and then we can jump right in to the topic. So as we all know, hip-hop was first created in the 70s, 1973, I believe, when DJ Kool Herc and other DJs like him began to loop funk and soul breaks for partygoers to dance over and eventually for MCs to rhyme over. So hip-hop production has always been rooted in and a byproduct of other genres. That's actually one of my favorite aspects of hip-hop production, is finding other styles and songs in a hip-hop beat. So some important happenings: the adoption of the TR-808 drum machine in hip-hop during the 80s was huge. Producers gravitated toward the booming bass drum on top of the ability to program rhythms into the machine. This took hip-hop to new places, and besides the turntable, it's easily one of the most influential inventions to hip-hop music and has remained a mainstay in the genre. The 80s and 90s were also around the time when sampling began to be widely utilized. First, producers were sampling other beats or other instruments and looping them to create new beats. And then it evolved to sampling pieces of songs to create new ones. In the late 80s, it was not uncommon to see a song sample like 10 to 15 different songs, which is the case in some of the songs that we'll talk about later. This was when producers really started to unlock the complex techniques of creating a song. Production from the 70s and early 80s advanced from simplistic, repetitive melodies and grooves to dense songs with so many different sounds layered to make something new in the 80s and 90s. In the 2000s, we had Kanye popularizing the chipmunk effect, where he sped up a vocal sample, changed the pitch of it to create a completely new thing. Synthesizers became popular with the rise of G-Funk, bringing new sounds to hip-hop production. And as technology advanced, it expanded the capabilities of how music could be made digitally, and production became more complex. And then, of course, there's the whole sampling copyright issue that started in 1991. Biz Markie and Warner Brothers got sued by an artist because they sampled his song, didn't ask for permission, and that kind of started the movement of where they said, okay, copyright infringement, when it comes to music, is a thing. There will be consequences. And so people in the hip-hop industry kind of had to adapt. A lot of them started to remake samples with live instrumentation rather than reaching out to the actual like producer. Sometimes it was easier to just reach out to the person who made like the writers of the songs. And then lots of artists like Dr. Dre moved towards live instrumentation. They were like, you know what? Let's just forget the samples. I'll figure out something else. So that is the short of it, and some of the biggest production, I guess, what do you call them, production happenings in history, and lots of things that are still important today when it comes to production. So what do you all want to talk about? What you got first up?
I think what's so great about hip hop in general is, you know, it's really the only genre. Then I'm just excluding electronica, but it's really the only genre that can directly reference songs of the past. You know, rock or pop, even those would deal with covers if they're going to tackle a song from. So it's like this ever evolving history book of like really obscure music, mm-hmm. that is in a way keeping those songs alive and relevant. And so when you go back and you listen, it's like a direct connection, or you even will inspire people to look up what is that from, and they'll discover. It's a really interesting, it's like a moving, you know, thing of music history of all types, of funk, of soul, of rock, of, you know, everything. It's just a really cool kind of living organism.
I think that's true. I want to brief. I agree. I'm gonna. That's my correct. Contribution. No, I just. I do want to briefly mention Ahmad. I took a history of hip hop class in college.
So why don't you let Noah handle it?
No, I just that. What took us an entire semester of school, you just covered in about a few minutes. So. I should have just waited until now.
At half the price. The stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I only charged them like $1,500, you know?
I don't know. It's tough. It's tough where to begin. I do agree. I think the sampling part of it and the way that keeps songs alive is very interesting. I feel like I've changed where my stance is on that over the years. Just as we're sitting here now, I find myself very ready to be like, fuck them, people can sample whatever they want.
Yeah.
Because it is partially like for the greater good, Brian, like you said, it's keeping these old songs alive. Yeah. You know, people are not, this is, you know, by no means a hard and fast rule, but people are rarely sampling like the big songs. People aren't out here sampling like Respect.
Yeah.
More often than not, it's an old soul song, an old funk, an old something that makes you go like, oh, what is that? Have I heard that before? Maybe not. Or like it's I don't know that Otis Redding song off the top of my head. It's not sitting on the dock of the bay. It's you know, the samples. I don't know the names of the samples off the top of my head. I started to say like, oh, it's the sample he used for Otis.
Oh, Try a Little Tenderness. Yeah.
Which is also a big song.
Yeah, sure. Not a good example. I'm just talking here. Yeah, but you know what I mean.
I do.
I also, just like, I don't know, it's not your thing. They're making a new thing with it. You want to sit here and be like, I should get money for that song because my song's in it. Like, well, you didn't make that song. They made that song. So shut up. You got plenty of money.
I mean, there's several examples in other mediums, like in film, if somebody uses a shot that, like, or someone's wearing the same costume that someone wore in another film, or using the same framing or, like, a similar plot device that's in, like, the same, like, you know, Psycho has been... This is a bad example, but because it's usually for comedic effect. But Psycho has been, that shower scene has been used in so many other films.
Sure.
And, like, they don't pay Hitchcock every time that happens.
Right. Just because they're not, like, physically splicing in that shot.
Right.
And so if you can get around it by being like, oh, I did try a little tenderness, except I played it. So I covered it for the song. Think there's so something, it's fine. Like, that's...
I do think there's something, though, where you should give credit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Yes.
But, and that's why in those movies they'll have, like, you know, a special thanks or whatever. Yeah, but, or
thanks,
they'll talk, or they'll talk about it. But so they would have to get paid then for those. It's like, it's not just about getting permission. You also have to clear it, licensing for it. Yeah, that's tough. So on the one hand, I can see why artists, you know, the Curtis Mayfields or whatever, would be like, yeah, I pay me, you know. But at the same time, it is this kind of thing where it's like, I'm doing it because I like it, and I think I can build on it.
And I'm bringing more attention to your song.
Yeah.
Like, especially
as long
as
you are crediting it, you are giving it more attention.
And especially in the streaming era, I don't have the data to back this up, but I have to imagine that if a popular artist has a song and they sample another artist's song, that artist's song streaming numbers will likely see a big bump.
Yeah. Noah, do you have the data?
Yeah, hang on.
You took that class. I was wondering.
I just think of all of the songs that we missed out on because of, and that we don't even know about because a sample didn't get cleared. It's, you know.
It's. I think that they should just go by the Otis rule, where if you're sampling a song, the title just has to be that person.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. I think that's a good compromise.
Which,
that everyone...
which would change some of the songs that I'm going to be talking about to, like, you know, I guess Heart of the City would stay the same, but it would be from the name of the people. So Kendrick Lamar's I would be Isley.
Okay. That fits.
Sure, that's very similar. Isley. California Love becomes Cocker. Or Joe.
Joe,
Joe be Joe. Game Theory by the Roots would be Sly. It's just, or Sylvester.
Yeah.
If we want to go full name.
How many songs in hip-hop history would just be called James?
Oh my God.
Most
so
of
many.
Them?
Yeah. Aretha. It'd be pretty stacked. Can I
tell you something else? James Brown has that, it's a James Brown song with the drums that have been sampled by, like, everyone ever. I've listened to that song and, like, clips of that,
what,
like,
is the
drum
song
beat.
Called?
I don't actually
Do
remember.
You know?
Yeah, I don't know the name of it.
But I always expect to listen to it and be like, oh, of course, that classic rhythm that I've heard in so many things.
Are you looking at
it? And I just, it never clicks with me.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I'm left thinking, like, these are the drums that, like, everyone's losing their mind about. Like, it's just, just drums. It sampled any drums.
Yeah, and that was a part of the early sampling that still kind of boggles my mind, where they were like, I just don't understand how some of these producers listen to music, where they're like, oh man, I really like that hi-hat. Give me that hi-hat. I want that hi-hat. I'm going to use that in another song. And then they do something crazy to it, or change the pitch of a hi-hat, and then it's something completely different.
Or even when it's like 18 samples, like, I want to take the cymbals from here, the chimes of this song, that one bass line, but only half that note, and then use the other bass line here, and it's like, okay, well.
Yeah. It's like, I like songs. Music's good.
I also feel like it's really hard, and...
Oh, it's called Funky Drummer.
All right.
Yeah,
Brown.
Yes, it is, of course.
Play it in my ear.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that just makes me, like, I think of Kanye West with his, like, crates of records, just constantly listening to, like, these like old throwaway songs, and being like, oh, I could use that to make a mega hit.
Yeah, I would trade places for a day with Kanye just so that I could hear music the way he hears it.
Oh, I would do it for other reasons.
For other reasons. Yeah.
I don't think I could last a day.
Kanye, why? Kanye would wake up the next day and be like, "Did you transfer $40 million to someone named Brian?" Like, I don't know, I guess. Yeah. I'm kooky. It sounds like me.
Yeah, could I spend a day in his brain in like 2006?
I would no, but it would be like I would videotape myself as Kanye going, "Of sound mind and body, agree to this. I'm not being coerced. I would get my lawyer involved."
You would sign it. You have a notary public. Yeah, all of that.
I would be airtight.
That's smart.
Yeah, it would be, and I would also move into his house. Just for that room, that like viewing room he has.
Sure.
Or that giant. It's made of concrete. It seems like a little cold, just not inviting. Just like his heart. But it's a giant screen.
Yeah, it's quite a bit of Kanye. He's cold and uninviting.
Play Madden. All right. So as far as like things, I gotta stop playing this James Brown song. But, as far as like actual examples, I find that you mentioned the live instrumentation, and that is really what I connect to.
Perfect. That was my next question.
It what I connect to?
Or live instrumentation versus digital music production, you prefer?
It's the live instrumentation always stands out to me more.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you can do a wide spectrum of them, like the Angry Pianos in New York State of Mind by Nas, or like the Gentle Pianos of Cream by Wu-Tang.
Mm-hmm.
You have like a Playful Piano and Work by Gangstar. Like there's just the same instrument, different songs, but they could create different moods in these hip hop songs. The fact that Kendrick basically just retooled that Lady by the Isley Brothers for I, which is like one of my favorite beats. No one knows I'm a big fan of horns, so the Crazy in Love horns, which is just incredible, and like that's the kind of shit that can really get me up and moving. And so that's why I think when she put out the live Lemonade or just her Coachella concert, the way that she did that when it slowed it down, which is I could just listen to that all day. So there's something to the idea of live instruments that just make it sound better, and you can tell. Like I think Late Registration, Kanye like rented like a small orchestra just to work on those songs, and you can tell that it's just like that shows. So I'm all for live instrumentation. It really pops for me.
I'm with you. I back when MTV Unplugged, and there was a kind of separate offshoot that was similar, VH1 Storytellers, where they brought an artist in and they just performed some of their popular music live. I used to listen to Alicia Keys and Kanye West's VH1 Storytellers CDs all the time, just because the live versions of some of those songs, just like it breathed new life into the songs that I already loved.
Oh yeah. When Jay-Z's Unplugged went on spot, when Jay-Z's catalog was the first thing I listened to, because he has the Roots backing him on his Unplugged, and it's just like incredible.
Yeah, there's something about especially taking a song that was originally not done live, at least in the CDQ version, and then like using all the instruments at your disposal to just create something new, even though it's the same song and you're playing the same notes, but there's always something different and different riffs that you can add to live instrumentation that just
breathes. Especially songs that don't have live instrumentation, then you have to translate that to live instruments. It's a really wonderful thing to like experience, like, oh, that's the instrument that could then make this sound that you created on a computer.
I think it's interesting for me, because when I think of like hip-hop, I think of like electronically produced beats before I think of live instruments. Like
that makes sense
to me. Like live instrumentation is kind of a subset of the beat making, whereas like the default is just like made in a computer.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I agree with you guys. Like I prefer instruments. I think there's something extra to it that kind of brings it alive, especially if you're like actually going to see like a live performance.
Mm-hmm.
like, you know, Brian, you and I went and saw Kanye a while back.
Yeah, the Yeezus tour.
Yes, on, oh, the, nice. On the Yeezus tour.
Was that the mountain, when he was on the mountain?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I went to that one, too. That was,
it was at the United States, Kendrick Open.
Kendrick Open, yeah. Yeah, I was there for that one.
And, like, the arena was, like, a quarter of the way full. We were all going,
yeah,
why is it
nobody came
for Kendrick. Nobody was there. It was so weird.
Yeah, that was weird.
And I was like, is nobody going to show up for the Kanye concert?
Surely everyone who's coming to the Kanye concert is also coming early to see Kendrick, right? That's just what we're all doing.
But then,
and he had put out Good Kid at that point, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, that was insane.
What a bill, too. Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah.
I think back on that show compared to the Roots show we saw a few years ago. Yeah. And it's no comparison to me. Like, the Kanye show was good. The Roots show was top three concert I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
But Yeezus is an example of where the digitally created music works. Because that's one of his, like, just when looking back at his discography before his, you know, he, whatever. I was gonna say brain exploded, but he's dealing with some stuff, you know.
Yeah,
he is
actually unwell.
Yeah, sure. But looking back on it, it's one of his more interesting and I think impressively produced albums. Like, there are beats on there that when you listen back, you're almost surprised, like, oh right, this is on here, and this is just so good. So in that regard, it can certainly go both ways, especially for experimentation. Mm-hmm. But no, there's something to sampling. And those songs that you're sampling had live instruments.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I do want to just hop on that and say that, like electronically produced songs can also obviously be great. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the foundation of everything we're doing. And like, you listen to Yeezus, or, you know, I've been texting you guys about listening to Donuts over and over again. That Donuts album is just one of my favorite things to listen to. It doesn't really have, like, a standout track for me, because I just can't separate them in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the complexity and the layers of different shit going on in there.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't even begin to imagine how someone would do something like that.
Donuts is incredible. I wrote down a whole list of just things I love about Donuts, and I don't know if I want to go through that list now or if we want to wait till later.
Sprinkles, glaze.
Love an old fashioned.
Old fashioned is underrated.
Yes, I agree.
A good old fashioned donut is very underrated, but glaze is just, hands get sticky.
I mean, I think no matter what, you're going to be messing
with the side of your mouth
donut.
Gets sticky. I don't need, like, the side of my mouth with, like, specks of glaze on it.
Smaller bites.
I have a small mouth. What am I do. Chipmunk? What are you talking about? Everybody take a small.
I will say the one main thing I will say about J. Dilla's donuts is the amount of, for everybody listening who doesn't know, about how J. Dilla's Donuts was created. He had started working on it before he passed away, but he had lupus and he ended up dying while he was working on the project. And he was literally working on the project on his deathbed in the hospital. They brought in a bunch of, like, you know, all the equipment he needed, and he was making the album like 3 days. He finished it 3 days before he passed.
Wow.
So, and, you know, I think about that, and I think it is important to think about that album because you can hear so many different messages about, like, death and love just in the beats, like, in the samples that he chose. Like, I think the amount of heart he was able to get into the instrumentation of that album is incredible. Like, it's an album that can, like, really speak to you, and it's like, I'm just listening to beats here. Like, this is... like, there's rarely, like, anybody speaking over it. So, yeah, that's... I love J. Dilla's Donuts. I was very happy when you texted, I want to talk about this. I was like, yep.
How do you feel about samples as far as, like a sample that's in the forefront of the song?
Mm.
It's so prevalent, right? So, like, a Heart of the City, where it's just... It's basically
the sample
song.
Is the hook kind
right.
of thing.
Yeah. As opposed to taking, like, a drum line from here. And you, once you break it down, you can recognize the samples. Like, where, you know, which one is preferable? Which one do you like more?
Go ahead. I don't know. I mean, I think obviously there's room for both. I do kind of like it when the sample is just like readily recognizable. Because if you go in and you see, oh, this song sampled from here and here, and I listen to the song and like I just can't tell where. It's no problem with the song. It still makes a great end product. But I do think there's a little fun novelty in listening to a song and going like, oh, there's Joe Cocker in the background. Like, how cool, but now it's a new thing.
Yeah.
Well, do you think do you think that there's anything, for example, before we recorded, I played you that, the what would become Interlude by Jay-Z, which is Little Boy Blues's Seed of Love from 1968. Does it take anything away from Interlude when you hear the sample and it's so similar? Because for years you've looked at Interlude and you're like, that's just such a great beat. That's just, it really gets you there. And then you're like, oh, it's essentially the same. They tweaked a few things. Does it ever take away from a song when you realize how much they took from the sample?
It does for me. Not in like a big way, in that like when you played me that and I was like, oh, that's like the whole beat.
Exactly it, yeah.
So it's not like I'm gonna go listen to Interlude and like hear it differently now and be like, oh, this song is just not as good. But in the moment I was like, oh man, that was like almost like instrument for instrument, exactly what they put in the song. Yeah, it does take a win out of it. Yeah.
I completely agree. Because I don't find that it happens too often. I do think by and large, they change up the samples a lot to make it into a new thing. But that particular example was very like, I don't want to say shocking. Like I wasn't appalled by it, but it was like, oh, that's the whole thing.
Yeah,
didn't really do much. Yeah, that's just the song.
Yeah. I asked that question before we got your response to the other one about samples.
Oh, about I do
samples. The one question we just had about samples.
I do think there is room for both, like Noah said. I will say when the sample is very prevalent, I like it when like the artist knows what to do with that. Because like as an artist, no matter how good the sample is, you don't really want the sample to define the song. I think you want like your contribution to just like merge with it in a nice way. So I think when the artist knows what to do, when they have like a sample that's, you know, easily recognizable and also like in the forefront of the song, like Jay-Z does on Heart of the City, I think that I really like that. But I also, to the other end of things, I like a chase, just for me personally. I like when I like hear a hint of something where it's like, I've heard that before. I like trying to like track it down by myself before I go to Genius. Cause I, nowadays when I like hear an album, I'll listen to it a few times before I go to Genius and be like, okay, what are the samples on this song that I like didn't pick up the first time? So I like to look into things like that. So I like both ways, but
I feel that way about Touch the Sky, which Just Blaze also did. He did Interlude, but the Move On Up sample, those horns, and it's like they cut them off right before they get to the Move On Up recognition.
Yeah.
Where it's like do 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 do, and then he stops work. It's like do 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 do. Like, oh, now I know it's Move On Up. But he cuts it before that, so it is a fun. It's almost like a roller coaster. You're like, oh, it's coming now. It's not.
Yeah.
And it does really enhance that song. So it's recognized. You're like, I know this from something, and it's fun. I'm listening to it, but I can't tell you what exactly the song is.
Yeah. I also think that Kanye did on that song. Like, he matched the energy of the original sample. Like, his Touch the Sky version, I feel like, from an energy, like, perspective, is like, okay, these are trying to get to the same place as Move On Up. So I appreciate that, and that he didn't do something really intense and crazy over Move On Up when he really could have and has done on other songs. Yeah. So I like that he stuck to the...
There are songs that are, like, as much about the original artist or the original... song as is about the new one, which is why I love Otis so much, is because it is such a like paying a respect to Otis Redding, and it's such a great beat, and I thought they did such a great job of being like, we are going to sample him and just do a song under his production, but like, he's the reason, so we'll just call it that.
Yeah.
It works so well.
Kanye loves Otis Redding. I think actually both of you all had an Otis Redding Kanye produced sample on your list.
Yeah.
Yeah, I that's one of my...
Did I? I don't know.
Wait. No, I think...
You had Otis on
your list.
Yeah,
you and I did. You have Otis on your list.
Oh, Otis is on my list, and you have Gone.
I had Otis on my list, and then I saw your list, so I took it. All right, we'll talk about it at some point. Because it is the best song on Watch the Throne, in my opinion.
It is. It's very good.
What else? What else? No, what else?
What do you guys think about when a sample, like, doesn't match the song it's in? Blood on the Leaves is from Yeezus.
It's such a good beat.
It is. And like, it's... Oh, why are you talking?
I don't know.
My phone just started making noise.
Siri.
Yeah. Siri, what do you think about the juxtaposition? Because, yeah, that is always like... On the one hand, it's a great beat.
Listening to
that song is a great experience. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I do occasionally bump on it and be like, this, like, I don't think this, like, the lyrics of this song have like a broader meaning. It's just kind of like a relationship song, and it's using one of the heaviest and like more
it doesn't
meaningful
match
songs
at all.
Yeah.
In the world, in
it's unfortunate.
And
he's running out of money. He's just been spending too much. I don't have the money. Stop asking me for the money.
Yeah, and you're
bitches are surrounding him.
Yeah, you're listening to Nina Simone's "Strange Fruit," and you're like, this.
But there's something about...
Maybe that's the point, how different it is?
I'm sure he can explain it.
Yeah.
But there's something about the fact that he's auto-tuned there, so when he ends his line, it's high, and then it matches her coming in right after. And then this bass is just crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It is such a well-produced song. When I first listened to Yeezus, I had that song on repeat for probably a full week. Like, I just let that song overtake me. Just not even really even thinking about the lyrics. The energy and the passion with which Kanye was singing, you could say, on that song mixed with that sample was incredible. But then, you know, as the years rolled on and I had more time to really think about it and grow, every time I hear that song now, it bites at me a little bit because it's like... Ah, Kanye, like, this isn't... You can't use this sample for this! Like, so now I actually do hear that song differently, where, like, I have these memories in my head of, like, wow, remember when I used to just listen to that song for, like, 2 hours straight?
Just uncritically, be like, this is great.
Yeah, and now I'm like, it's not the same.
You'd be lost without...
Oh, yeah, it's all the time. All the time.
Before we move off... from Yeezus, I was almost gonna talk about it, but Black Skinhead's drum is I was obsessed with that. That album came out on my birthday. It was his follow up to Dark Twisted Beautiful Fantasy. I was so excited, and I was doing the I was watching children. Not let me back up. I was working in my mom's after school program, so I was in charge of children, and I would just be walking down the halls, and I would just be doing that all the time. It's so good.
I very shortly after that album came out, I had uploaded it to my iPod. Remember iPods?
Yeah, I do.
Mine's over there.
So
it's on that show.
I was up visiting my mom's side of the family in Michigan. We're at her cabin, and I had my iPod like plugged into the speaker, playing like visiting the family music, like Fleet Foxes or something at the time. And then I went outside for a while, and apparently one of my aunts picked up my iPod and went to like the recently listened to or whatever, and be like, what is Noah listen to?
No.
And just put on
just going
Yeezus.
New Slaves. Da, na, 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 na.
And yeah, they got like two songs deep, and then I come back and Yeezus is just blaring in the cabin. And they kinda look at me like, this is what you're listening to. I didn't put this on.
You say, I like that they look at you and go, why did you do this?
I didn't I didn't choose Why to did play you think Jesus we would for like everybody.
That's so funny.
I put on the calm background folk music, and then you changed it.
This is your fault.
It's not my fault you don't know what Jesus is.
That is hilarious. Looking at your list that you sent us, you have the Without You by Anderson .Paak, and that, you know how much I love Malibu, but it's his, which I don't believe he's sampling much on that album, if at all.
It's, the sample is a lot of the, in part of that song, and then there's, some, vocal stuff in the
But
room,
on that whole album, I think most of
Oh, and whole album, yeah.
I think most of it's original music, and so that's something that not only is it live instrumentation, but it has the jazz influences, the funk influences, and it's original beats, and, all of them hit. So it is nice, since we're talking about beats, when, it's like the Beastie Boys would constantly do it, where they would just create their own sound, and it just sounds just as good as something that's been sampled. So there is, I like that is still prominent in hip-hop. That is more than just, trap music and the, repeating sounds over and over again.
I agree.
Paak's great.
Paak is great. Once again, I agree.
Do you want to talk about the Gray album and your?
Sure, I would love to talk about the Gray album. At the time, this was I think I came across the Gray album before I was when I was still in my a distrustful of hip hop phase. But I was like, oh, he was
succumbing to my influence of playing it all the time in the apartment.
Yeah, but then it was like, oh, it's also the Beatles.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's the Beatles,
hip hop is the Beatles.
Hip hop. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Beat. It has beat in the word, true. And that hip hop has beats.
That's that's great. And I think I still go back and listen to that sometime. The way that Danger Mouse was able to,
why don't you explain what it is?
Yeah, so that's a fine point. So Jay-Z released the Black Album just as vocal tracks.
Arguably his best album.
Agreed. I think I would agree there too, off the top of my head. Danger Mouse, legendary producer, very cool name. He took songs off of the White Album by the Beatles and repurposed them into beats for the Black Album vocals, and the Gray Album was born.
A great concept.
And then it was quickly taken away.
Yes.
Yes, for copyright reasons. Even though he had the permission of everybody involved, from what I heard.
Is that true? I bet the artists were like, sure, and the lawyers were like, no.
Yeah, yes. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, that is it. Like, he asked... Nope.
Paul McCartney was like, sounds cool, and his lawyers were like, no.
Yeah, Paul and Ringo were both into it.
Yeah.
Jay-Z was like, sure.
The lawyers involved in the estate were like, that'll be $700 million, please.
And it's a shame that it's not can you buy it even?
No. I don't think so.
No, it's just it's
on YouTube.
Find it on SoundCloud and YouTube and shit. But the White Album, I think, for me, is a huge Beatles head. Are you a Beatles guy?
I am not. I was actually about to say, I'm curious, for people who know the Beatles, how did you feel the Beatles beats stood up with Jay-Z's lyrics compared to, the originals?
Better than Blood on the Leaves.
Well, that's good.
I think it's for me, it's kind of the perfect album to use because I love the Beatles. The White Album is has a lot of great songs, but it's not it's not one of the ones that's in my heart.
Okay,
it's like a,
I think that's a common opinion though. I think it's one of their most records because it was just the all white cover, writing on it. So it was this very cool thing. But I think most people are just kind of it's good.
But I'm still super familiar with it, so it's very cool for me listening to what Danger Mouse did to these songs. That on the one hand, I recognize I put Dirt Off Your Shoulder on my list as the one that's kind of I think the best one on the album.
Okay,
which samples a song called Julia. And
which
so
is a very sad song.
I do,
isn't it?
Probably. It certainly sounds it. It does not sound anything like it does on the Gray album. But on the one hand, I do recognize that I have that moment I was talking about earlier where I go, oh yeah, like that's Julia. Like I'm listening to the White Album, but on the other hand, it's completely repurposed into this whole other thing that is, you know, for me, actually, like the definitive Dirt Off Your Shoulder, because just because I'd listened to it, I did probably not first. I'm sure I'd heard Dirt Off Your Shoulder in the world, but like I sat down and listened to this a lot before I fully sat down and listened to the Black Album a lot. Yeah. So when I think of Dirt Off Your Shoulder, it is the beat from the Grey Album, which I just look back on. It's like very interesting. It's the same song, but is like a completely different thing in two ways.
Yeah. So then the discussion becomes, you know, what is the better kind of Jay-Z collab? Is it Grey Album with its acclaim and its legendary collaborations, or Collision Course, his team up with Linkin Park? Dirt Off Your Shoulder was with Lying For You, Lying From You, sorry, and Mind Blowing, because I was a huge fan of Linkin Park. So I don't know, Noah. I don't know which is
better. I think that's not an exact parallel, because you do still also like the Beatles quite a bit.
Yeah, I do.
Whereas I am on the record as not like fond of Linkin Park.
You still don't like Linkin Park. I still like the Beatles, and you still don't like Linkin Park.
Yeah.
I do think that Numb and Encore is a classic team up, and I think it works.
Incredible.
It works so well. I do think that works really well. There's a lot of acts that do that. You know, Elvis Costello did that album with the Roots and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it is interesting how, even when the song, and it's similar to Blown Leaves, but Blown Leaves is just so specifically about, it's just such an imagery.
Yeah.
Very specifically pointed. Whereas the song Julia that the Beatles did, that's the sample, is about John Lennon's mom who died when she was like 44.
Mm-hmm. What a juxtaposition.
But because we don't hear that or those lyrics, we can't tie it to that song and its content. Whereas Kanye starts Blown Leaves with Blood on the Leaves.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And the strange fruit and everything.
Yeah,
like
you're
that.
Just listening to Nina Simone sing.
Yeah.
Whereas Julia has been cut up and like completely.
Well, I don't know what happened to her, but I think.
Lord.
It's a while ago. I was really debating it, but it was so long ago. I figured I'd say it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Okay. So let's do favorite beats. I mean, we've already kind of started getting into it.
Yeah. I mean, the one other thing I do want to say is it's, and this I think goes to Questlove's music history, but Game Theory, which was the album I fell in love with the Roots on, the title track is taken from Life of Fortune and Fame by Sly and the Family Stone, which I looked up, wasn't even publicly released until like 7 years after Game Theory came out. So that must have been a deep cut that he had heard like around.
That
or
sounds,
probably just had
sounds like
a bootleg copy of and used it, and it's a very direct kind of remixing of that song, and it works really well. But all right, I'll give my favorite beats. One of you can go first.
All right, I'll pop in. So I think I have the shortest list of things we haven't already talked about. You Don't Know by Jay-Z. Is just to me the quintessential like get the blood pumping, like, turn it up as loud as it goes and just kind of just listen to the beat destroy your ears, which is
that's a Kanye right?
No, just Blaze.
Oh, it's just Blaze. It's got the chipmunk voice in it.
Oh yeah,
that's
why. Well, his influence is far reaching.
Sure.
And it helps that Jay-Z was really able to match that beat himself, being one of the best to ever do it. But that is kind of a shame occasionally when you hear like, oh, like this beat is great, or even like these lyrics are great, but then the other side of the song just doesn't quite meet the moment.
Yeah.
Jay-Z fully meets the moment there. That song absolutely rules.
It's incredible.
Will never not get me going.
I wasn't going to.
Okay.
I'm waiting for you to be finished.
Rigor Mortis by Kendrick. To me the exact opposite. Like You Don't Know is just like fucking goes hard, like hype beat. whereas rigor mortis is like a heady, like what if I rapped over like weirdly timed jazz?
Yeah.
Just horns going fast, and again Kendrick is just kind of it's just kind of like a technical like mm-hmm. exhibition. He's not like rapping about anything big or meaningful. It's one of his songs where he's just like, also I'm just like really good at this, just mm-hmm. like making my mouth make these sounds. I'm incredibly talented in that way. I always have a lot of fun listening to that. There was a time when I told myself like I'm gonna be able to do this. I'm gonna learn this song and like be able to take in enough oxygen to do the whole thing. Yeah. Never happened.
I don't even know if Kendrick can do it. I'm sure he can't do it.
That was not one take.
Yeah.
Well, this was before I knew that was a thing. Possibly. I was like, wow, he took such a big breath. When did he do it?
And it's such a simple beat too, rigor mortis. Like that horn loop is really just like the crux of it. And then Kendrick he's like, all right, just keep that going. And then he just destroys it.
It's such an interesting song too, because it's not even on rhythm. Like his rapping isn't on rhythm with that beat at all.
Yeah.
It's disjointed entirely. It's like two different songs.
That's why I find it so interesting, because it's like a rap nerd like technical like mm-hmm. what if I did this but with this?
Yep.
Which as a sort of obnoxious nerd myself at times, very cool.
No. I won't hear that kind of talk.
All right, fine, all the time. song by kids these days called Doo-Wah. You know, I have no idea what kind of reach Kids These Days had in the hip hop community. This is a Chicago based podcast, so I'm guessing a lot of your listenership might be familiar. Vic Mensa's first project, mm-hmm. which did you guys hear about Vic Mensa?
Yeah, he got arrested for
LSD. Got arrested with like 100 million pounds of acid in the airport.
Everyone's getting arrested recently.
He was going through the airport with just a preposterous amount of like LSD and
herbs
and shit. I don't actually know. And there's a lot of when I was reading about this, there was a lot of consternation because apparently when you get when the cops arrest you with a bunch of drugs, they will just weigh like whatever it is. It's like LSD is like a little drop of drugs on a piece of paper, and so they'll just weigh like a ream of paper and be like, "We found you with 10 pounds of LSD," which is like nowhere near the amount of drugs you have. So it's hard to say, but people were saying like 700 to 900 tabs is probably what it worked out to. Wow. Just in a bag in the airport. They're trying to get on a plane.
Wow!
Like, what are you doing?
Where is he going?
I don't know. I think he was in Portland. I'm not sure about that.
I think he had just come back from Ghana or something, I heard, or something like that. Because he was just out there with Chance. And then...
Yeah, I do remember hearing it was an international flight.
Yeah.
Which just seems even crazier. He was like rolling around.
Suitcase.
He made it all the way to the U.S.
He got to customs. Like, your customs has the same level of scrutiny as Ghana's, right?
Do you think there's ever a case where, like, the airport in Ghana saw it in their bag and the guy was like, it's Monday, I don't where is he going, let's let Seattle deal with this, just send him
through. I mean, maybe
it's not a gun, I don't care, you know. I bet there are days where they're just like, what is that, like toothpaste? Ooh,
I bet that's true of like most places that aren't the US
yeah, sure.
and don't have this
yeah.
preposterous TSA nonsense yeah, that, like, we don't have to get into right now, but it's anyway, yeah, Vic, like, get hire a guy is
seriously.
The point to roll around your drugs. Kids
yeah,
these
that's,
days, though.
We back up. That's the lesson no one wants to put out there. It's not don't transport illegal drugs. It's get someone else to do it.
You know? Yeah, pay them well enough to take the rap. Kids these days, one of my absolute favorite hip-hop acts. And the way that Doo-Wah is like fully live instrumentation. Mm-hmm. They had like just a band as a part of the band, but also does their samples live in that song. They're doing "Where Is My Mind" by the Pixies.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few of them in there, and "Where Is My Mind" is like the prominent one, so that's what's coming to mind. But just when I first heard that, just kind of like blew my mind. I was like, I've never heard someone do this before. which I'm sure was not the first time it was done, but just it is personal to me and how cool it was. And I still fucking love that song.
I'm right there with you. Kids these days, Karen and I probably listened to that mixtape so many times. We went and saw them perform it live. It's so good, especially the live instrumentation and how much they actually sample songs in that entire album, Trap House Rock. Like, almost, like, minus maybe, like, two or three songs. Like, almost every song has, like, a relatively well-known song sampled just through live instrumentation. I think it really brings a feel of nostalgia to that album that is already there because this was something that we listened to, you know, back in, like, 2012 or whenever it was. But now there's even more nostalgia because they're referencing all of these older songs. But, yeah, that song is definitely one of my favorites off of Trap House Rock. Yeah. It's so good.
And then, just to throw out we've already briefly talked about Gone by Kanye West, which...
That was on your list too, right?
No, but it's one of my favorite Kanye songs. Kanye
I mean, I don't think it's at all controversial to say it's his best song on his best album.
You had Spaceship.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Gone is... Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, that's a... I don't know. That is my favorite Kanye West song. It's my favorite. It's my favorite Kanye song. I think my favorite Kanye album. Mm-hmm. And I think the sample and the beat is a big part of it to just keep it going. It's like a 7-minute song.
Yeah.
Which I always kind of forget.
Yeah.
And the rhythm just keeps going. It's got a good very fun
Cameron and Consequence verse too.
Yeah.
Have you heard Late Orchestration? Have you ever heard of that?
I think I have, but just like once.
It's I actually might have it on DVD, so if I can find that, okay, I'll let you borrow it. But it's essentially Kanye doing Late Registration live with a full orchestra, and it's...
That sounds incredible.
I had forgotten about it until you were just talking about this song, but I'm gonna try and find that because it's so good. It's so good. But yes, Gone is specifically the last verse of Gone. Kanye's I think it's the fifth verse of the song, but that last verse I think is like one of his best verses ever. It's incredible.
I these songs just barely missed my list here, but I don't think we can do a Beats segment without discussing the greatest curator of them, Missy Elliott. And her work with Timbaland is just revolutionary and remains relevant and great. And Work It and Get Your Freak On, both were on my list for so long because they are just incredible. So I want to give them a shout out.
Timbaland is a master producer.
Incredible.
Just incredible. The sounds that he would just like work his way into beats is just insane. Yeah.
Along with being a boot mogul, you know, he's got two businesses going at once.
True.
I wanted to mention Passing Me By from... Far Side, them sampling Summer in the City by Quincy Jones is terrific, and their flow on that is almost unmatched. I also love beats on songs that enhance the tone of it. Mm-hmm. So specifically the song that got me into Kendrick Lamar, Swimming Pools, it sounds like you're underwater.
Yeah.
It sounds distorted, and so it only adds to the effect of that song. Sabotage from the Beastie Boys sounds like they are scratching records by smashing guitars onto a mixing board. It's incredible and fits the tone. Rebirth of Slick, Cool Like That from Diggable Planets. Them mixing that jazz with kind of contemporary, especially it was in the mid-90s, but that hip-hop with their love of jazz really shines through, and it fits so well. And then my favorite Roots song, The Seed 2.0, which I didn't realize until doing research for this, is a remix of a song called The Seed by Cody Chestnut.
I also learned that while doing research for this.
Which is wild, because when you listen to it, like, this is a good song, but the root, it's similar. It's not dissimilar to the interlude thing, but the Roots elevating it and just doing little tweaks to that beat and their live instrumentation, because the Cody version sounds like it's almost like through the phone, like his voice is distorted. Yeah. So this with Black Thought's Rap It is just, it's one of, it's my, fi- it's might be my favorite rap song. No, it's not, but it's one of my favorite songs. My favorite rap song is Runaway by Kanye, which is also similar to Swimming Pools in that it enhances that entire song. It sounds like you're in the nightmare of a museum.
That is a master like, class in production, like that, that modern, entire song.
Yeah. Like you're in a modern art museum and it's like melting and it's incredible. But no, my favorite beat, and it's a shame that a few of the lyrics do not hold up, is Heart of the City from the Blueprint. I ever since I've got into hip hop, that is just the gold standard for a sample and for, you know, the homage of jazz and making it modern. It's just so, so good.
I agree. Kanye, that was another Kanye sample.
Yeah.
On an album where Kanye and Just Blaze were actually going, you know, back and forth trying to see who could make the best beats, which is just an incredible. I mean, and maybe it happens and we don't hear about it, but I wish that was something that was more prominent in today's hip hop. It's like, let's have these competitions and like get the fans a part of it. I think that would be so cool. But and it could be something that's still happening behind the scenes. But I just want more access. I want more access to like the making of these songs. And some people do it, but I just wish that was something that we could really tap into.
I don't want this to be the last thing I say about beats, but something that is interesting about sampling is that I think what happened, someone mentioned it, but the idea that you hear a song on an old song on a new song and it becomes like the Fugees' "Killing Me Softly" was the first time I heard "Killing Me Softly," and so then I hear the other version, which my mom grew up with, and she's like, "No, this is the version." I'm like, "No, it's the Fugees' one." It's the one that says "one time a bunch," and it's similar to "Wild Wild West."
Oh,
that Stevie Wonder sample. That is that. I was like, "What?" When that came out, we were like 9. That was where I heard that for the first time. And so then listening to Stevie Wonder, I'm like, "Oh, this is that song." And I think that's funny that as kids grow up with hip hop and with samples being so prominent, is that that's their first introduction to these artists. So much so that it feels weird when you listen to it. And you're like, Oh, that's weird, because this is from this other song.
Yeah.
It's from this other song where it's like a little to a lot, like faster and like zippier.
Yeah.
And then I have a final question for you once you finish with your songs.
Okay. So one thing that I discovered when I went into it, because I was like picking my favorite beats is going to be so hard. So I tried to zero in on like what is my favorite type of beat and then just find a bunch of my favorite songs of that type to make a list. And so I figured out very quickly that a soul sample is my favorite type of beat. I really love R&B music, sometimes more than hip hop, to be honest. And so with those two being my favorite genres, I think hearing hip hop songs with R&B influence, soul samples is just the perfect merging of those two genres for me. So I think that's why soul samples just kind of stick in my brain a lot more. And then when I made this list, I was like, okay, let me just think of some soul samples that I really like. I realized that it's clearly 70s soul when that's sampled in a hip-hop song that really sticks with me. Because so most of the songs on my list.
And that's such a prominent decade. Doing my research, too, it's all 70s.
Yeah, yeah, that's clearly where a lot of these producers were digging in the crates.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's see. Some of the songs that I had here. A lot of Kanye. I think Kanye produced half of the songs on my list, and I think that's because Kanye is my favorite producer. I can't deny that. Yeah. I love about Kanye and his production that he's able to take an instrument, whatever he thinks an instrument is. To him, somebody's voice is an instrument. To him, like somebody's like last third of their verse in another song is an instrument. So I like his ability to be like, I want that piece and I want that piece, and then he just like merges them together into something else. And he's especially good at it with soul samples. So I had "Testify" by Common, which samples some 70s R&B group. I really just love, I love the beat first off, because I would say the first few times I listened to that song, I didn't even register that Common was doing this like deep, like storytelling about a woman who killed somebody but then like framed somebody else. I probably listened to the song and just heard the beat the first few times, and then I went back and I was like, oh, comment. This was really good job. Good job. This is
songwriting.
Putting some thought into this one, aren't you, Comet?
That's exactly why beats stay. It's just that's what initially you hear in your head. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you have to focus on lyrics. You don't have to focus on hearing a beat.
Exactly. Let's see. The other Kanye produced songs I had Wouldn't Get Far, which is by The Game, a classic hip hop sample. I had Otis by The Throne, which you already talked about. I had Spaceship from The College Dropout, which also features Consequence, who was on Gone. Spaceship is probably one of my top three Kanye songs. I think, you know, the Distant Lover sample by Marvin Gaye that he flipped was so well done. And this was back when you could still hear the struggle in Kanye's voice. Like, he was still very relatable. And The College Dropout was also just one of my favorite albums for such a long time that I've just listened to it more than so many other albums. So Spaceship is just a song that I like. And that actually brought up a point. I like when producers try to sample a very classic song, like one that like the casual fan is going to hear this and be like, oh yeah, I've heard that. And then they're up to the task. And I think Kanye, when he sampled Distant Lover by Marvin Gaye, or even Try a Little Tenderness on Otis, like those are classic songs where if you fail at like turning this into something else, people aren't gonna really think about this song ever again. But I think he did a good job. And just some other ones I wanted to mention. A Tribe Called Quest. I feel like we don't talk a lot about their production.
I had a bunch of their songs on my list.
Q-Tip is insane. And I put lyrics to go on here because it's one of my favorite A Tribe Called Quest songs. And I just think the James Brown funky guitar riff, which kind of drives the beat, mixed with just Minnie Riperton, who has one of the most incredible voices you ever heard. He just found a high-pitched like note that Minnie Riperton did, and then he looped it through the entire song. So there's just like, she's literally just singing in your ear the entire time. That mixed with the funk guitar, it's one of the craziest beats I've ever heard. And it's I appreciate when a producer like really, when they really try. Like, and I know that's easy to say, me with no production ability at all.
I like when they put a little effort into it.
Yeah.
Not just phoning it in.
I mean, we do that all the time. We do that with sports. We do that with movies.
I mean, yeah. I think that's fair. I think you can tell when, like, so when someone is just, like, like putting a lot of effort in and, like, showing it.
Also, I'm not getting paid to do it. If they want to give me their money, I'll try.
Yeah, true.
I'll try my hardest.
I'll take some classes.
So, yeah.
But yeah, so those are the main ones I want to talk. Oh, and Oh Boy by Cameron, also produced by Just Blaze. Just Blaze is also one of my favorite producers. I think, we talked about this with You Don't Know, and also by Lord Knows. I think you mentioned yesterday, Lord Knows by Drake, and how it almost made your list. Just Blaze produced both of those songs as well as Oh Boy by Cameron. And one of the things I love about Just Blaze is how like large scale his beats are. Like, his beats are hard hitting on purpose. Like it's like they need to be played in a stadium. They're meant to get people moving. And I think he's also very good at soul sampling, so he's kind of worked his way into my favorite producer list just by sheer quantity of how many great beats he's done for so many good artists. But yeah, soul samples for me is like that's top tier. That's just what I shoot for. Every time I hear one, I'm like, yeah.
And then to kind of bring it to the present, who's working? What's a producer, not necessarily Just Blaze, although I know he's still working, or Kanye, but like, who's a producer now of the modern era that you get excited to hear their music, or one that you've noticed is really standing out?
Hit Boy, for sure. He's been very busy the past couple of years, so he produced a lot for like Kanye and Jay-Z back around like the Watch the Throne era, and that's when he kind of got big. But now he's coming to his own. He produced both of Nas's last albums, the King's Disease albums. He produced a lot on Big Sean's last album. He's like one of the producers that's very mainstream now, but I think his quality of work is still like very high. So I love when I hear that Hit-Boy is producing something. And they're not new, but anytime the Neptunes dust off any of their stuff and decide to produce for somebody, I'm very excited about it. And I think they've got a lot of stuff coming. Sound too, yeah. And they've got some stuff coming. I think
you can tell when Pharrell's worked on a track.
Mm-hmm. Also, Tyler the Creator. I think he's very much influenced by the Neptunes, and you can hear that in his music. But he also has kind of dug out his own sound, where when I hear a beat that he's made, I'm like, oh yeah, that's Tyler the Creator. Because that's one of the things I think is so weird about producers, is like, not only do they have like their producer tags, but there are these great producers who have sounds. Like, they've figured out a way to take instruments and mix them in ways that are different but also similar enough where you can recognize their work across Kanye, different artists. And that's just so fascinating to me. I really envy like producers who are like really good at what they do, because you know, I had a moment where I you know, thought that I could be a rapper back when I was in college, and like that Trump was like, maybe I'll produce my own beats, and it's so hard. It's incredibly hard.
Did you try your hardest though?
Probably didn't try my hardest. But I probably thought I did.
I also want to advocate for no more tagging your songs with something. Let me find out Mike Will made it. I don't need you to tell me immediately.
He just really wants you to know.
It's like, I think I like that, because I think I like your idea of banning that, is what I mean. Because especially for the sort of layman or more passive listener like me, or me in the past, certainly, it kind of leads you to believe that like, oh, like that's that this person, like this song is by this person.
Yeah.
Like, wow, DJ Khaled has written a lot of songs.
I'm looking specifically at DJ Khaled when I make that point too. I know it's another one.
Yeah.
It's the next song is playing.
Yeah, it's a major key. It's a major key.
I like another one though. It's just a fun thing
good.
To say.
It is
good.
Have never listened to his albums though.
No.
Where it's just like every song, it's another one. I'm like, I know.
No, I
hasn't ended.
I like that it exists as a phrase that I can say and make myself giggle, but I don't know that it's worth it. To all the music, it's
like he's got like 17 album tracks. I have to hear that shit 17 times.
Anything else? What you got? Any other?
Are we ending on DJ Khaled?
No,
DJ Khaled. Let's not.
I will. I did want to throw one more thing out. Mm-hmm. It didn't occur to me to add it to my list. I sometimes regret how much I'm just like not into like older hip hop. Like I am very like modern focused.
I differ there. Yeah.
I have quite a bit of respect for you know, like 90s hip hop and older. Mm-hmm. But it's just not my go to. However, I do want to shout out They Reminisce Over You, Pete Rock and CL Smooth, I think to me is just like the definitive hip hop beat. If you were to just like wake me up from a deep sleep and be like, what's the hip hop beat? I think that's where I would go.
I like that.
I also think Camp Low doesn't get as much credit for their beats as they could be. And No Diggity. What a great... Come on.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's just completely recognizable immediately. All right. I think that's it.
Yeah, like I think that's a good place.
I feel better about ending on No Diggity than DJ Khaled. So. all right. Thank you all. I was going to say thank you for coming out, but thank me for coming to your place. <Yes. laughs> Thank you for hosting me.
You're welcome for having me.
This is very exciting. I've really enjoyed letting the guests pick the topics and see what about music like my guests are most interested in, because I've, you know, mostly been driving the conversations for the past 200 and so episodes. So I was very excited that you all chose to talk about the production aspect of it, because it's, as you mentioned at the top of the episode, it's very important, and likely more important, if not as equal, but I think you can say it's more important than the actual,
when
like
you're in a bar or in a club, it's what people respond to.
Yeah.
I think it's certainly the forefront. I want to thank you for having us, obviously, but also congratulations on 4 seasons.
Thank you.
I'm so excited to see what you do next. And yeah, we'll have you on our podcast.
Yeah,
for a third time tonight, I agree.
But
just put me on a soundboard. I agree. Good point.
I don't know, know if anyone has said exciting, but we have some exciting news for you.
Yes, I was just about to say, plug what you want to plug.
Well, our podcast is What's in the Box Office, where we discuss what money movies made. And if it's good, if it's bad. Did you see Scream? Was it crowded? We'll tell you how much it made. Why? Why? What has this pandemic done to movies? Spider-Man is one.
It's helped.
Spider-Man is now. Spider-Man's now the highest grossing solo superhero film of all time, surpassing Black Panther.
Wow.
Yeah, in a pandemic. It's wild. And that's because of Christmas legs. You don't know what those are? Listen to our podcast. We also play games. We do, but we have series. We do a bunch of fun stuff. Noah, where can they find us? Because I really don't know the handles. I don't listen when you do this. I think it's Wit Box Office. But...
Yeah, we're Wit Box Office on Twitter and Instagram. And we're on all the platforms.
Yeah, and I also want to... Oh, and I'm at on Twitter, Brian DeSerber. DeSerber. I also wanted to mention that we do have something exciting to announce. What's coming up, Ahmad?
What's coming up?
Beside the award stuff, you know, Oscars are coming out. We'll be talking about that stuff, but... March 6th, we are back with Multiplex Madness.
Oh.
A new tournament. We did three tournaments. We determined the greatest blockbuster of the 2010s, which was Get Out.
Yes.
The 2000s, which was Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. And the 90s, which was Titanic.
Great choice.
But we're done with that format. We've completed the decade trilogy.
Oh.
And we had to pivot, and we did.
I love a pivot.
We are starting on March 6th, the tournament to determine the biggest flop of the 21st century in a series we are calling Multiplex Sadness.
That is so good. Wait, so you're going to have to watch a bunch of shitty movies for this?
Not all of them are shitty, but okay. A fair amount of shitty.
A much higher ratio than for the first three.
We've been narrowing it down. We've had to invert our categories. Easier road to success.
Oh, I can't wait. That is so good.
From 2000 to 2000, what are we're not doing to 2020 because it's just not fair. So yeah. 2000, 2019, okay. Eligibility. We have new categories.
Ooh.
Supposed franchise starter. Franchise killer. Sequels that did not continue a franchise. So that is coming March 6th. We're gonna have you on if you want.
I'm very excited for this,
and that will conclude, if all goes according to plan, on our 200th episode. Stay tuned for that. It's coming March 6th. Multiplex Sadness.
And definitely go back and listen to their previous tournaments because they are very good.
Thank you.
Multiplex Forever, Multiplex Madness Forever, Multiplex Madness 2000, and just regular old Multiplex Madness.
That's good. Multiplex Sadness. Okay. Yeah, I'm excited for that.
That was all Noah. You're struggling with the title.
Well, thank you all again for coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening and for joining us on the farewell tour. This has been Thinking Outside the Boombox. You can find me at TOTB, the podcast, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. What is coming up? Honestly, it's up in the air. The next episode was supposed to be the Grammy episode. The Grammys have now been postponed until April, so that's not going to come out until then. The next episode after that was supposed to be the 6th annual Thinking Outside the Boombox Award Show, which we'll see what happens with that because...
What do you mean?
Because I've gotten... The deadline is in like 2 weeks and I've gotten one submission, so...
I've done everything with the videos. Mine's coming.
Oh, no. I know I can count on you all. We'll see how many submissions I get. And I think I set a cap at like... If I get at least 7, I think that's enough data to make a decision. Sure. But if I don't get 7, then we'll have to see what happens. But...
We'll talk it out. We'll all come back here. Karen will come and we'll just all talk out winners.
Yeah, we'll just live come to a conclusion.
That'd be fun.
I'm fine with that. But yeah, go to thinkingoutsidetheboombox.com to stay up to date on the album releases in 2022 and all of that other fun stuff. This has been Thinking Outside the Boombox, your number one source for hip hop and R&B news. Peace.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.